Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. You will hear a story from Susan Shand. Next is the health report about efforts to defeat the disease malaria. Then, listen for our National Parks series about Alaska's Glacier Bay National Park. But first, this report. The President of Indonesia announced on Monday where his country's new capital will be built. President Joko Widodo said that, after 3 years of studies, the government chose to build the capital in East Kalimantan Province on the island of Borneo. The goal is to move the national government outside of Jakarta, which is facing problems of overcrowding and pollution. Studies have shown that the land on which the city was built is sinking. The new capital has not yet been named. Widodo, known to Indonesians as Jokowi, said the new capital will be closer to the center of the country. He said that because there are two cities near the proposed capital, many of the roads and other necessary infrastructure are already complete. He added that the new site had been chosen because there was little risk of earthquakes, floods, fires, or volcanic activity. Jokowi said the burden of keeping the capital in Jakarta was too heavy because it is also the center of finance, business, and trade. The city, once known as Batavia, also is home to Indonesia's largest seaport and airport. The Greater Jakarta area is home to about 30 million people. The president said the island of Java was not chosen as the site for the capital because the country's wealth and people are too highly concentrated there. Currently, 54% of the population lives on Java, Indonesia's fourth largest island by land area. Jokowi added that economic disparities between Java and elsewhere would also increase if the new capital were in Java. East Kalimantan is believed to be rich in minerals and was once completely covered by rainforest. It is also home to some of the world's rarest animals, such as orangutans. However, large areas of forest have been cut down in recent years. The government is currently writing the law calling for the new capital. Parliament will then need to approve the move. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Ah, As with any war, there are winners and losers. That is also the case with the trade war between China and the United States. As the two sides battle, companies affected by high tariffs are looking to manufacture their products elsewhere. So businesses operating in other countries are experiencing economic growth. Two factories in Vietnam manufacture electric bicycles for Pedego, an American company based in California. About 80% of Pedego's bicycle parts once came from China, but not anymore. Now we're probably 70% in Vietnam and 30% in Taiwan, said Don DiCostanzo. He is a co-founder of the company and its chief executive officer. In February 2018, DiCostanzo decided to move production to Vietnam because of the threat of high European Union tariffs on Chinese-made electric bikes. Production in Vietnam started 7 months later, in September. That was the same month the U.S. government ordered tariffs on Chinese-made products that included electric bikes. We then were immediately able to accelerate that production, DiCostanzo said, and we began producing bikes in Vietnam for this country, the U.S., in September, right after the tariffs went in place. And by January 1st, 2019, we eliminated all production in China and managed to move all of our production to Vietnam. By the beginning of 2019, the factories in Vietnam were producing bicycles for Pedego. While some parts are still coming from China, DiCostanzo keeps looking in other countries for those parts. In time, Pedego's need for Chinese-manufactured parts slowly decreased. Pedego is not the only company moving manufacturing away from China because of the trade war. The U.S.-based company GoPro moved production of cameras for the American market from China to Mexico in June. GoPro said it made the move because of possible tariffs, as well as recognize some cost savings and efficiencies. GoPro's cameras for markets other than the United States continue to be made in China. The two countries that are benefiting the most are Vietnam and Mexico, and everybody else is looking at them with envy, said Kevin Clodin. He heads the Center for Regional Economics at the Milken Institute, a research center based in Santa Monica, California. The U.S. Census Bureau reports that goods imported from Mexico increased by more than 6% for the first 6 months of 2019, compared to the same time in 2018. It said imports from Vietnam during that same period rose by more than 33%. Chinese imports for the same period decreased by more than 12%. The Vietnamese government has done a great job of making themselves ready and available as a direct competitor to China for a while, particularly on cost, Clodin said. DiCostanzo said he found the quality of products from Vietnam was better than those from China. Manufacturing and outsourcing products in a worldwide economy is a tricky business, however. Unusual weather, political unrest, or even the appearance of a less costly competitor can cause businesses to turn to a different manufacturer. Manufacturing has shown itself to be mobile in a way that we never could have imagined years ago, Clodin said. Some companies in the United States, such as Pedego, would like to manufacture their products in a U.S. community someday. I'm Susan Shand.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The World Health Organization says it is possible to defeat the disease malaria, although that is not likely to happen with the current methods. Pedro Alonso directs the United Nations Agency's Global Malaria Program. He says the WHO wants to eradicate the disease, but with the tools we have today, it is most unlikely eradication will be achieved. Alonso spoke last week as he presented the results of a 3-year-long study on the fight against the disease. Malaria infected around 219 million people in 2017. That year, about 435,000 people died from the disease. The large majority were babies and children in the poorest areas of Africa. These totals are little changed from 2016. But the numbers are smaller than the 239 million infections and 607,000 deaths reported in 2010. Abdulrahman Diallo is head of the RBM Partnership to End Malaria. The group released a statement from him on the WHO report. It said, "Today, there are more countries without malaria than with it, and more countries than ever have fewer than 10,000 malaria cases, putting elimination within reach." Diallo noted that in some areas, malaria cases are increasing, showing a need to reignite and accelerate progress. WHO officials have long wanted to destroy malaria. The United Nations agency first attempted a campaign against the disease in 1955, before suspending it in the 1960s. Now, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is providing financial support for the latest efforts. There are a number of drugs available to successfully treat malaria. Sleeping under chemically treated bed nets has proven to be effective in order to control malaria-carrying mosquitoes and infections. The drug company GSK has also developed a vaccine that has proven partially effective against malaria. The vaccine is currently used in Ghana and Malawi. But the WHO's report says these tools will not be enough to end the threat from malaria altogether. It calls for research and development of transformative tools and knowledge to control mosquitoes and create more effective medicines to prevent and treat the disease. The report says less than 1% of international financing for health research and development now goes to developing tools to fight malaria. Our priority should be to establish the foundation for a successful future eradication effort while guarding against the risk of failure that would lead to the waste of huge sums of money, the report said. Smallpox is the only human disease to ever have been eradicated. Thanks to the success of vaccinations, the WHO declared the disease eradicated in 1980. Since then, no natural cases of smallpox have been reported. In 1988, the WHO and health partners launched an international campaign to defeat polio by 2000. But even with billions of invested dollars, the efforts have repeatedly missed eradication targets. An effective vaccine is something we desperately need if we're ever going to get malaria under control, and we just don't have it, said Alistair Craig of the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Craig wondered whether malaria programs would be able to raise the money needed, given other competing eradication campaigns, including those for polio and guinea worm. Sean Clark is co-director of the Malaria Center at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. She says that since mosquitoes spread malaria by infecting people with a parasite, eradication might only be possible if there is a sense of urgency. The longer it takes, the more opportunity there is for the parasite to evolve, she said. So this is something that, if it's to be done, should be done relatively quickly. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Today, in our travels through America's national parks, we revisit the state of Alaska. The northernmost state is home to 8 major national parks. Today, we visit one of its most famous parks, Glacier Bay. This huge park in the southeastern part of the state covers more than 1 million hectares of Alaskan wilderness. It includes mountains, glaciers, fjords, and even rainforests. Glacier Bay supports hundreds of kinds of animals, including many species of birds, fish, bears, whales, and sea lions. As its name suggests, much of Glacier Bay National Park is covered by glaciers. A glacier is a large area of ice that moves slowly down a slope or valley or over a wide area of land. Glaciers cover more than 5,000 square kilometers of the park. Glacial ice has shaped the land over the last 7 million years. The glaciers found in the park today are what remains from an ice advance known as the Little Ice Age. That period began about 4,000 years ago.
During the Little Ice Age, the cold weather caused the ice to grow and advance. That growth continued until the 1700s, when the climate began to warm. The hotter temperatures caused the ice to start melting. That melting led the huge glacier to separate into more than 1,000 different glaciers. The extremely tall and jagged mountains seen in Glacier Bay National Park were formed by the ice advancing and then melting over time. The melting of the ice also created water that filled in and created the many fjords within the park. Fjords are narrow parts of the ocean that sit between cliffs or mountains. The huge amounts of water from the melted ice killed off many kinds of plants. Vegetation returned to the area over the next 200 years. The regrowth in plants also brought back many animals to the land. This return of life to Glacier Bay is why it is sometimes called a land reborn.
There is evidence that people have lived in the area for several thousand years. Glacier Bay is the homeland of the Huna Tlingit people. The Tlingit are an Alaskan native tribe. They live throughout southeastern Alaska. They began settling in the Glacier Bay area after the last ice age, once the glaciers began to retreat. Today, the Tlingit people live a modern life, but they also practice traditions unique to their culture. In the past, the Huna Tlingit harvested gull eggs every year. Gulls are large gray and white birds that live near the ocean. Gull eggs are an important type of food for the Huna Tlingit. Family harvest trips served as a way to keep ties with their homeland and to pass on stories, moral codes, and cultural traditions to the younger generation. In the 1960s, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act forced them to stop collecting gull eggs. Together with the National Park Service, however, they have worked to create a sustainable way for them to continue practicing this tradition.
One of the first major expeditions to the area took place in 1794. Lieutenant Joseph Whidbey arrived near Glacier Bay aboard the HMS Discovery, a British Royal Navy ship. The expedition was led by Captain George Vancouver. At the time, the bay was still almost completely filled with ice. The crew described the scene as a compact sheet of ice as far as the eye could distinguish. In 1879, the naturalist John Muir visited the area to do research. He found that glacial ice had melted back almost 50 kilometers and had formed a bay. After his visit, Muir and other conservationists urged Congress to protect this special area. In 1925, President Calvin Coolidge made Glacier Bay a national monument. It did not become an official national park, however, until 1980. In 1992, Glacier Bay became part of a huge World Heritage Site along the border of Canada and the United States. The 9.7 million hectare site is the largest internationally protected area in the world.
One-fifth of Glacier Bay National Park is ocean water. And no point within the park is more than 50 kilometers from the coast. Most animals living here depend on the water or shoreline. Glacier Bay is home to brown bears and black bears. They are found in the forests as well as along the coastline. They feed on berries and plants found in the woods. They also feed on the fish found in the waters. Humpback whales also feed on fish in Glacier Bay's waters. Whales are large mammals that live in the ocean. Humpbacks can weigh more than 35,000 kilograms. They come to Glacier Bay every summer for one main reason: food. They feed on small fish in the water. They eat more than 450 kilograms of food each day. They remain in Glacier Bay for about 5 months each year. There are also 281 species of birds in Glacier Bay. These include gulls, guillemots, puffins, merlets, and cormorants. Many of these birds make nests on cliffs. They eat small fish and other sea life. Other animals found in the park include moose, mountain goats, stellar sea lions, harbor seals, harbor porpoises, and sea otters.
Glacier Bay is a popular place for people searching for adventure. Some visitors choose to explore the park by kayak. The small, narrow boats offer visitors a chance to experience the park's many fjords and its hundreds of kilometers of coastline. Hiking and camping are also popular activities in the park. But hikers and campers must have respect for the harsh and remote environment. Weather and water conditions can be extreme. Food can also be limited in this area. There is only one official campground, located in Bartlett Cove. But camping is permitted along any of the shores or forests found in the park. This kind of camping is called backcountry camping.
Another popular way to visit the park is by boat or ship. Cruise ships and tour boats make regular trips into the park. Passengers are able to see the park's glaciers up close. These glaciers are always changing. Visitors may witness huge pieces of ice breaking apart from the glacier. This is known as calving. When the ice falls into the water, it creates a loud, thunder-like noise. From glacial fjords to mountain peaks, Glacier Bay holds some of the continent's most awe-inspiring natural wonders. It is a land reborn and a place that continues to change with time. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program from the Voice of America.